I'd like to turn to the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 27, and also chapter 30. 1 Samuel, chapter 27, we'll read verses 1 and 2. And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. And Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in any coast of Israel. So shall I escape out of his hand. And David arose, and he passed over with 600 men that were with him unto Achish, the son of Maach, king of Gath. Chapter 30. Verse 6, we just want to read the last part of that verse. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. David was a remarkable man, one of the most important and prominent figures in Bible history, in Israel's history, and in the history of the world. Among the great characters of the Bible, among the great men and women of faith, David, of course, stands tall. His name is mentioned over 1,000 times in the Word of God. And his name means beloved. Beloved. We see him in the Word of God as a shepherd, a musician, a composer, a writer, a soldier, a king, military strategist, an administrator, and in some ways a type of Jesus Christ. His life was filled with many courageous, good, and extraordinary deeds and accomplishments. By the end of his life, in 2 Samuel 23, we see his last words, and in 2 Samuel 23 and verse 1, he is known as the sweet psalmist of Israel. In looking at the life of David, as in all the lives of the illustrious Bible characters, it is very, very important that we remember that he was a man subject to like passions as we are. That's what's so encouraging about Bible characters. That he was a man like as we means that he had sins, he had weaknesses, there were many failures in his life, he had faults, he had physical and mental frailties. He was a man. And as such, from time to time, he struggled between right and wrong. As a man like ourselves, he lived under a variety of circumstances and conditions. He knew what it was to be wealthy. He also knew what it was to be poverty-stricken. He knew what it was to be a king. He also knew what it was to be a fugitive. He knew what it was to be loved. He knew what it was to be hated. He knew what it was to have joy, and he knew what it was to have crushing sorrow as well. He experienced victory, and he experienced defeat. He knew what it was to have the assurance of God in his heart. And he also knew what it was to become fearful and overwhelmed with burdens and stresses. In his life, he experienced many trials. He experienced calamities of all kinds and distresses and difficulties and troubles. There's much to learn from David's life. And looking at David's life, it serves as a help to us. It serves as a warning to us. And it serves as an encouragement to us. In the verses that we have read for our text, we see in 1 Samuel 27, and it's carried over into chapters 28 and 29 and the early verses of chapter 30. It's carried on until what we read there in 1 Samuel 30, verse 6. We see David experiencing spiritual regression. And then what we read there in chapter 30, verse 6, we see David experiencing spiritual recovery. So from this stage of David's life, once again, we receive warning. We receive instruction, we receive encouragement, we receive hope. And our subject this morning is spiritual regression and recovery. Spiritual regression and recovery. Consider David's regression. Coming to chapter 27, imagine yourself in David's place. Put yourself in David's place. You were told as a very young person that you were going to be the next king of Israel. And Samuel, the aged man of God, came and anointed you for that office. Then, like a whirlwind, one activity after another took place in your life that would bring you to national prominence. You killed Goliath with a single stone from your sling. You were promoted in the army, and you were made captain over 1,000 men. You married the king's daughter, and you were best friends with the king's son. It seems that every event in your life was bringing you closer and closer to the day that you would sit as king. Everything is pointing in that direction. But then things begin to happen. You fall out of favor with the king due to no wrongdoing of your own. And he even tries to kill you. And now you can no longer fellowship with Jonathan, your best friend. And you are demoted. And you lose your position in the king's army. And the next thing you know, you're a fugitive, running from an insane king who is determined to kill you. Yet, while you run from your enemy, you continue for the most part to do what is right. And you even spare the king's life when the opportunity to kill him is virtually handed to you. And you continue to seek God's direction in your life, believing that somehow, someday, his promises for your life would be fulfilled. Then, one day, 1 Samuel 27, you begin to think that God has forgotten you. And you begin to think that your enemies will eventually prevail over you. You become discouraged. You find yourself now in the pit of hopelessness. And while you are in that condition or state, you make a very foolish decision. And may I say, while you're in that condition or state, every decision you make is likely to be foolish. But the decision you make brings unimaginable trouble into your life. And it brings great loss into your life. That was the life of David. And from chapter 27, verse 1, through the last statement of chapter 30, verse 6, this is a tragic state of David's life. It's a tragic stage in David's life. As we observe this particular stage in his life, sadly, we can see ourselves at various times in our own lives. And not only is that so, but David portrays a tendency that is in each one of us. So let's look at the record here of David's regression. In chapter 24, we see Saul and his 3,000 men pursuing David in Engedi. And in doing so, Saul seeks rest in a cave. Just so happens that it was the same cave that David was hiding in. And as Saul was sleeping in that cave, David was strongly urged by his 600 men to kill Saul. Their reasoning was, God has brought you this opportunity. God has delivered Saul into your hands. But David regarded Saul as the Lord's anointed. He would not hurt the king. What he did do was he cut a piece of the king's robe so that Saul would know that David had been there and could have killed him. In chapter 26, we see Saul and his 3,000 men pursuing David in the desert of Ziph. And David would come into Saul's camp as Saul and his men were asleep. And this time David was urged by Abishai, God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now therefore let me smite him. In other words, David, I know you won't kill him, but let me kill him. And David replied there in 1 Samuel 26, verses 9 through 11. He said, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? As the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die. The Lord forbid that I should stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. And David took the spear and the water jug of Saul and left the camp. In both of these incidents, David displayed great faith. David displayed assurance that everything is in the Lord's hand. And God's in control. And God will be faithful to His promises. In both of these incidents, David refused. Even upon the urging of others, David refused to take matters into his own hands. But coming to chapter 27 in verse 1, that faith, that trust, that assurance in God is gone. It's gone. After these two incidents, God's protection of David became so evident to Saul that he confessed his own wickedness. This, of course, was unknown to David. And he recognized that David was destined to be king. And we read at the close of 1 Samuel chapter 26, "So David went on his way, and Saul returned to his place." All appears to be well. But then we come to chapter 27. And all is not well with David. David is now in a state of spiritual decline. He is now in a state of spiritual deterioration. David is moving in the wrong direction spiritually. All is not well with David. Notice where this spiritual regression began. Verse 1 of chapter 27. "And David said in his heart." This is where all departures from the Lord originate. "And David said in his heart." Circumstances appear to have turned for the better. But there was a spiritual regression going on in the heart of David. There was unbelief and there was doubt in his heart. Notice, "And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul." The thought of David's heart was completely false. There was no truth in it whatsoever. It was contrary to all evidence. It was contrary to all of David's past experiences. It was contrary to the promises of God. "And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul." You see, David, in his heart, has lost sight of the promises of God. In his heart, he has lost sight of the faithfulness of God. In his heart, he has lost sight of the love and the care of God. In his heart, he has lost sight of God's power in his behalf and upon him. David, in his heart, has lost sight of the fact that God is always working behind the scenes. And he already was. Saul had already determined, unknown to David, "I'm not going to pursue David anymore. He's destined to be king." But David had these thoughts in his heart. All things were working out for good, but David had this thought in his heart. David in the past had trusted in the unseen and the unknown doings of God. But you come to chapter 27 and all that is gone. "And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. In those words, there is a tone of discouragement. In those words, there is a tone of defeat. And there is depression. This is dangerous. This is dangerous. Notice what this led to. It led to improper reasoning. Verse 1 again. There is nothing better for me than that I should escape into the land of the Philistines. Oh, how sad and terrible. How sinful. How offensive to God such reasoning is. There's nothing better for me than for me at this time to go over into the land of the enemies of God. This is what's best for me. Can't tell you how many times people have told me that this is what's best for me. It's never best for you to go over and join with the enemies of God. That's improper reasoning. David had been chosen. David had been anointed of God. David was the recipient of the promises of God. David had been the witness of the miraculous care and love of God in his own life. And now in his heart is telling him, there's nothing better for you than to go over into the land of the Philistines. What David is saying here is, I'm never going to be king. God has promised, but it's never going to happen. Things are never going to change. I have no choice but to flee to the enemy. And there, I will be better off. That is utter despair. And that's where David is. When you lose sight of God's promises, when you lose sight of God's love, when you lose sight of His care and His power and His working, despair will eventually be the result. David had decided that God's plan had failed. And now he was going to take matters into his own hands. David is saying, I've waited long enough. Keep in mind, unknown to David, Saul has already given up. Now often that happens. Things are about to change. Things are about to get better. And then all of a sudden, our heart begins to talk to us. And now trouble is on the way. Also notice that in his reasonings, David had it all figured out how this was going to work. Verse 1, he said, Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in the coast of Israel. So shall I escape out of his hand. He had it all planned. This is how it's going to play out. This is what I'm going to do. And this is how it will play out. But I want you to notice where this spiritual regression in his heart took him. In verse 2, and David arose. And David arose, and he passed over with the 600 men. The thought that David's had in his heart had an effect on 600 men. We'll find out later it had an effect on more than that. It had an effect on their families also. All because of what started in David's heart. David arose and he passed over with 600 men that were with him unto Achish, the son of Maoch, king of Gath. Notice verse 3, and David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, even David with his two wives. So there they are, dwelling in the land of the enemy. You read on in chapter 27 and verse 5, David speaking to Achish refers to himself as the servant of Achish. So here's the man of God now declaring himself to be the servant of the very enemies of God. David has regressed. Departing from God, aligning yourself with the enemy. You see here in David's case, at first, it appears to have worked just as David had planned. In verse 4 we read, and he, Saul, sought no more again for him. So David would begin to think, this worked just how I had it planned. Things are going so well. And also in verse 6, Achish gave David the whole city of Ziklag. Oh, this is the best decision I've ever made. Saul is no longer chasing me, and I've got the city of Ziklag. But be sure of this. In spite of appearance, departure from God never works. Never. I don't care what it appears. The truth is, David's move brought him on the verge of more sin. Chapter 28, verses 1 and 2. And it came to pass in those days that the Philistines, that's who David was dwelling with, gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish said unto David, know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men. And David said to Achish, surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do. And Achish said to David, therefore will I make thee keeper of mine head forever. David had made friends with the enemies of God, the enemies of God's people. Now he finds himself in a place where he would be fighting against Israel. David, having departed from God, taking matters into his own hands, lodging with the enemy, now finds himself in a predicament that he would have never been in had he remained faithful to God. In chapter 29, thanks to God's intervention, the Philistines began to think, as David is preparing to go to battle against Israel, the Philistines began to think, can we really trust David? Is not this the same David who killed Goliath and slew his tens of thousands? And the Philistines began to think it may not be wise to have David around as we go into war against Israel. So Achish sent David and his 600 men back to Ziklag. Thank God for his intervention. Notice David's regression resulted in much suffering and loss. Chapter 30. Verses 1 and 2. And it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day. It took them 3 days since Achish sent them back, that the Amalekites had invaded the south in Ziklag and smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire. And he had taken the women captives that were therein. They slew not any, neither great or small, but carried them away. and went on their way. So while David and his men were away from Ziklag, the Amalekites had attacked. And they set the city on fire. And they took away the families of David and his 600 men. And in verses 3 and 4, we have record of David and his men returning to Ziklag. So David and his men came to the city. And behold, it was burned with fire. And their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. Imagine the scene. The city is a smoldering ruin. David and his men no doubt go through the city frantically calling for their wives and their children, looking everywhere. But they're nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. They're gone. Again, picture the scene. Verse 4, David and 600 men lifted up their voice and wept. They lifted up their voice. Perhaps they said, "Why? Why, oh God, why?" And they wept, and they wept, and they wept until they could weep no more. And then the 600 men began to look at David. And they said, "This is your fault." And they began to talk of stoning David. And we read there in verse 6, "And David was greatly distressed. For the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of the people were grieved." Remember back in 1 Samuel 27, verse 1, David had it all figured out how it was going to work. This is not what he figured. This wasn't in David's calculations. Reading verses 3, 4, and 6 of chapter 30. What a picture. What a picture of anguish and suffering. Picture of pain and torment, sorrow and woe. Don't forget where it all began, in the heart of David. That's where it began. It began with unbelief and doubt, which led to defeat and discouragement and despair, which resulted in wrong thinking, which resulted in a wrong action. And sadly, this is a portrait of many a life of a child of God. But praise the Lord, the story doesn't end there. That's not where it ends. Which tells us there's hope. There's hope. Which brings us to our second point, David's recovery. Verse 6, David is greatly distressed. The people are greatly grieved. They're speaking of stoning him. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. What a difference it would have made had we read those words back in chapter 27 and verse 1. There in chapter 27 and verse 1, "And David said in his heart," and if right there we could have put those words, "but David encouraged himself in the Lord his God." And we read those words back in 27 verse 1. David and his 600 men would have never experienced the loss they experienced at Ziklag. Their families would have never had the experience of being taken away captive by the Amalekites. Again, but David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. This is where the light broke into the dark scene. This is where things began to get better. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. What that means is David cheered himself, inspired himself, motivated himself, stimulated himself, invigorated himself, emboldened and fortified himself. Where? In the land of the Philistines? No, in the Lord, his God. That's where he got better. Much is included and implied in those words that David encouraged himself in the Lord. Before David could find this encouragement in the Lord, there was conviction. God smote his heart. David lined up with the Philistines, ready to go to war with Israel. Comes to Ziklag. Everything is gone. The men speak of stoning him. And somewhere in that period of time, God smote the heart of David. And there was contrition of heart. And David confessed his unbelief and his doubt and his departure from God. His heart and his mind is now engaged with God. And he remembered the Lord was his God. He encouraged himself in the Lord, his God. His God. Oh, once again, had we read those words back in chapter 27. I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than that I should escape into the land of the Philistines. Oh, had he right then encouraged himself in the Lord, his God. Had he remembered right then, there's God and he is my God. Had he remembered that then, he would not have experienced any of these things. Oh, how true that is. So David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. That just another way of saying David returned to God. He returned to God. And that is the only way that you can recover from spiritual regression or spiritual decline. Is you have to return to God. Nothing else will do. As a result of returning to God, even while they spoke of stoning him, David was cheered. He was inspired. He was motivated. He was invigorated. He was emboldened. He was fortified. In other words, David is now right with God. He's now right with God. And everything begins to look different. And if folks would get right with God, things would look different. And everything begins to feel different. Everything looks different than it did back in chapter 27, verse 1. Everything feels different than it did back in chapter 27 and verse 1. Why? David is right with God. He's right with God. We read in verse 8, and David inquired at the Lord. Oh, had we read that back in chapter 27, verse 1. What a difference. But you see, back in chapter 27, verse 1, David wasn't in a state to inquire of God. But now he is. He's right with God. And David inquired of the Lord. In verses 18 and verse 19, we read twice, David recovered all. The road to recovery is in the Lord. The road to recovery is not in the land of the Philistines. The road to recovery is in the Lord. May we never forget that. Just as David here in chapter 30, there wasn't anybody else David could call on. 600 men are about to kill him. And there are times, I don't care how many people you've got in your contact list and your cell phone, there are times when there's no one you can call. There comes a time when an encouraging word from a friend just isn't going to do. There comes a time when you simply have to know well enough. You simply have to know God well enough to find Him in the prayer closet. There comes that time. There comes that time no phone call is going to do. No encouraging word from a friend is going to do. You just have to know God well enough to find Him in this book. And that's where David was. David knew God well enough to know now I need God. And oh, to know Him well enough to know I need God. A phone call from a friend isn't going to do. A change in circumstances isn't going to do. I need God. That's the road to recovery. Oh, you can get an encouraging word from a friend and you might feel better for a day, but you still haven't returned to God. Nothing's been fixed. Nothing's been fixed. You hear a song that cheers you. Someone reads you a poem and you feel better for a while, but nothing's been fixed. Because recovery is found in the Lord. It's not found in a friend. It's not found in a circumstance. It's found in the Lord. And we have to come to this realization. I need God. David's life has fallen apart. And David comes to the realization, it's not a new job that I need. It's not a new wife that I need. It's not a new family that I need. It's not a new set of circumstances I need. I need God! And all that we would come to that point. That's the only way. For husbands and wives, they're struggling. They can't get along. And they begin to think, what I need is a new husband or what I need is a new wife. No, what you need is God. And oh, to know Him well enough to know that I need God. I need God. And I'm not going to take another step until I find Him. Until He meets with me. Oh, had that been so back in chapter 27, verse 1. We need to know God well enough and know ourselves well enough to know I need God and come to Him. In other words, there comes a time when you just need to get right with God. Well, if such and such would happen, get right! I got these thoughts in my mind and I can't get rid of them. Get right! Get right with God. And that's what David did. We do not have the promise, in closing, of no problems. God's never given us that promise. We do not have the promise that we'll never have a struggle. That will never have a difficulty. That sadness will never come into our lives. We don't have those promises. But we do have the promise that there are no problems. There are no struggles. There are no difficulties. There is no sadness that is bigger than God. That is the promise. So draw near to God and be encouraged in Him. Oh, I'm so discouraged, people will say. And they'll blame their discouragement on the list is so long you can't even begin. Draw near to God. Encourage yourself in the Lord. Perhaps you're in a stage of spiritual deterioration. Don't you think that it's time to get right with God? People will say, I've been feeling this way for years. Well, don't you think it's about time to get right with God? There's the answer. The answer's not in the land of the Philistines. The answer is in the Lord, my God. God help us. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.